when I first read it. Joshua chapter 9 is an interesting chapter. And I think that it's really great before we hear the word explained, and as Greg has been praying through and preparing for this talk, that we kind of raise some of the issues that it raises for us. Flip back to Joshua 9, and I'd love you guys to talk to the person next to you, or in a small group at least, and try to make sense of it. What does it bring out for you? It might just raise more questions than answers, but that's okay. Try reading it from the start, from Joshua chapter 9, verse 1. And that gives you a bit more of the background of who these Gibeonites are and what they did. So have a bit of a read together in a small group of two or three people, just for a few minutes, and talk about what on earth you think it means. What on earth is it getting at, and why the heck are we preaching on it tonight? Let's have that time now, 5 minutes or so, for the people around you. Go for it.
Okay, well, I'll give you just a couple of seconds to finish up. Welcome everyone, my name's Greg Harris and I'm also part of the ministry team, and if I haven't had a chance to meet you, it is great to see you. I'm so glad you could be with us tonight. Hopefully you can stay and have a cuppa and something to eat. You might wonder when you go out in the foyer, what are all these boards along here? This afternoon we had our newcomers afternoon tea. So for all those who are new to our parish in the last 6 months or so, they came along and we got a chance to talk to them about what it is that we think is important here and what we're on about, and they got a chance to ask questions, and on the boards is just a whole lot of information. And so you might say, hey, I'd like to know what they saw or heard or got to read. It's still there for you, so to have a look at. Well, I wonder if you've ever had new neighbours move in next door or in the street, and I wonder if they've been interesting, which is a diplomatic way of saying interesting. Or maybe you've been at work and you've got a new work colleague or several new work colleagues, and they too have been interesting. You know, they upset the status quo. They change what is precious. Everything changes. How do you respond to those new kids on the block? Not the band. The idea of new kids on the block, the new neighbours, the new work colleagues. How do you respond to them? There's all these young people over here going, who's new kids on the block? But how do you respond to those new people who just move in? Do you welcome them? And if they're interesting, well, you see, that's the dilemma faced some 3,000 plus years ago to the people in this story from Joshua chapter 9, but I'm not actually talking about the Israelites. I'm talking about the Gibeonites, those people who were actually in the cul-de-sac before the Israelites, the new kids on the block, moved in. And they're interesting because, you see, not only are they different, but they threaten the status quo. They threaten all that is precious. They're coming to take over the cul-de-sac altogether. How do you respond to that? What do? Well, interestingly enough, there's two ways you can possibly respond to these new kids on the block. The first is the way that the Hittites, the Amorites, the Canaanites, the Perizzites, the Hivites, and the Jebusites responded. Have a look with me at the start of chapter 9, verse 1. You read it just a few moments ago in your group, hopefully. Chapter 9, verse 1 of Joshua. Now, when all the kings west of the Jordan heard about these things, those in the hill country, in the western foothills, and along the entire coast of the Great Sea, as far as Lebanon, that is, the kings of the Hittites, the Amorites, the Canaanites, the Perizzites, the Hivites, and the Jebusites, they came together to make war against Joshua and Israel. These guys get together and they form a pact. They form an alliance of the willing, or maybe not so willing, but they're going to have to do it anyway, and they make war against Joshua and Israel. And you know the thing about making war against Joshua and Israel is you're not actually making war against Joshua and Israel, because we know that you're actually making war against God. And I don't know about you, but that's not a smart thing to do. And in fact, I can't say too much, because this will give away next week. But it doesn't end well. In fact, it ends very badly. But that's next week. But the Gibeonites, now you see, they've got a cunning plan, you see. They've got a cunning plan on how to deal with these new kids on the block. They go by the strategy of, if you can't beat them, join them. Or, if you can't beat them, make a treaty with them. And that's what we see in the story. Have a look at verse 3. However, the people of Gibeon heard what Joshua had done to Jericho and Ai, and they found out they got flattened, and they resorted to a ruse, that is, a trick, a deception. It's not a word we use very often, is it? There you go, it's a nice four-letter word the next time you play Scrabble. They went as a delegation whose donkeys were loaded with worn-out sacks and old wineskins, cracked and mended. The men put worn and patched sandals on their feet and wore old clothes. All the bread of their food supply was dry and moldy. And they went to Joshua in the camp at Gilgal and said to him and the men of Israel, "We have come from a distant country. Make a treaty with us." What a great... Well, you've got to admit, that's not a bad idea, is it? If you know you're going to get wiped out and you can't beat them, then here's a good alternative. Give it a go, and it will work if the other group don't ask too many questions. Or if they ask questions, but they're not very good on the cross-examination and the follow-up. You see, the whole idea is, instead of putting on clean clothes, like you might when you try and go and make an agreement with someone, they put on old clothes and tattered clothes. Instead of having new sacks, they had old sacks. Instead of new wineskins, old cracked wineskins. Instead of new bread, old mouldy bread. Instead of new donkeys, well, maybe old donkeys, I don't know. It just had to look like it would be a long, long trip. And they go. And unfortunately, for the Israelites, they're not real good with the questioning. Have a look what happens in verse 7. The men of Israel said to the Hivites, "But perhaps you live near us. How then can we make a treaty with you?" Now, they started well, didn't they? They asked the question, "Perhaps you live near us, so we can't make a treaty with you." They understood that they were not to make treaties with those who lived in the land that God had given them. So what were going to be their neighbours when they first moved in? They weren't allowed to make treaties with. That was the land that God was going to give them. "So perhaps you live near us, how then can we make a treaty with you?" "We are your servants," they said to Joshua. But Joshua asked, "Who are you and where do you come from?" They answered, "Your servants have come from a distant country because of the fame of the Lord your God. For we have heard reports of him and all he did in Egypt, and all that he did to the two kings of the Amorites east of the Jordan, Sihon, king of Heshbon, Og, king of Bashan, who reigned in the Ashtaroth. And our elders, and all those living in our country, said to us, 'Take provisions for your journey. Go and meet them, and say to them, we are your servants. Make a treaty with us. This bread of ours was warm when we packed it in our home the day we left to come to you. But now, see how dry and moldy it is. And these wineskins, they were filled, when they were filled, they were new, but see how cracked they are. And our clothes and our sandals are worn out by the very long journey." You feel sorry for them, don't you? It's been such a long, long journey. And like I said, this ruse, this deception, this trick will work as long as you don't ask too many questions or you don't follow up on the cross-examination. They simply say, "We have come from a long way." Now, it's one thing. It's one thing to get deceived by what you see. But for the life of me, I cannot understand how Joshua and all these Israelites would accept, "We come from a distant land far away." Don't you think the next question should be, "And which country is that?" Or, "And you know, oh no, it's a distant, yeah, sorry, how far away?" You know what I mean? And that's actually the sad part of the story, isn't it? They don't follow up on it. They don't ask. In fact, there's even a sadder part to the story. Have a look at verse 14. The men of Israel sampled their provisions. Bags not getting the job of eating moldy bread. And did not inquire of the Lord. And then Joshua made a treaty of peace with them to let them live. And the leaders of the assembly ratified it by an oath. They did not inquire of the Lord. They didn't ask God. Now, don't you think he might have a pretty good idea where these blokes have come from? I think he would. Don't you think God might have an answer to this idea of making a treaty with them? I think he would have. But they didn't ask. Not only did they not ask the Gibeonites some further questions on exactly where they came from, they didn't even ask God about what he thought about this. And they make a treaty, and they sign it with an oath. They seal it with an oath, a binding oath. Are we any different? Are we any different at not inquiring of God sometimes? As I was thinking about this, I thought, you know, we sometimes fall for exactly the same problem. Because there are times when we make decisions and form opinions on big things. I'm talking about the big things. And we never ask God about them. We just form the opinion based on our own intelligence or our own experience. Let me give you an example. Our views and opinions on genetic engineering. Or sexuality. Or euthanasia. Or education. Environmental management, economic policy, you name them, name all the big ones. And how often do we base our opinions and our decisions on those things based on our experience and our own ability? Rather than inquiring of what God might say about that. Now, what does his word say about sexuality? What does God's word say about life and death? What does God say about money? What does God say about knowledge? What does God say about the environment? You know what I mean? How often do we not inquire of the Lord? And when we don't inquire of the Lord, how often do we find ourselves caught then in decisions that are either impossible to get out of or we can't get out of? And that's actually where Joshua finds himself. Have a look what happens then in verse 16. Verse 16, 3 days after they made the treaty with the Gibeonites, the Israelites heard that they were neighbours, living near them. So the Israelites set out, and on the third day came to the cities of Gibeon, Kephirah, Beroth, Kirath, Jearim. But the Israelites did not attack them, because the leaders of the assembly had sworn an oath to them by the Lord, the God of Israel. And the whole assembly, that's the whole of Israel, grumbled against the leaders for making this decision and making this oath. And then jump down with me to verse 22. Then Joshua summoned the Gibeonites and said, "Why did you deceive us by saying, 'We live a long way from you,' while actually you live near us? You are now under a curse. You will never cease to serve as woodcutters and water carriers for the house of my God." And then listen to what the Gibeonites say, verse 24. They answered Joshua, "Your servants were clearly told how the Lord your God had commanded his servant Moses to give you the whole land and to wipe out all the inhabitants from before you. So we feared for our lives because of you, and that is why we did this." They feared. That's why they did it. And the Israelites fell for it. But, and this is just the most amazing, but in a strange twist, the Gibeonites, who were so far from God, end up where? What are they doing now? They're carting the water and they're chopping the wood for the sacrificial worship in the temple in the future, but in the tabernacle now. Physically, they are now close to the worship of God. And I actually wonder how much of an effect that must have had over time. In fact, Rob was saying this morning how it's not just just a few years later, it's not even decades later, but generations upon generations upon generations later, they turn up again. They're still there. And when the temple has to be rebuilt, there they are, building the temple again. Still close, still part of what God is doing. Well, what do we do with this passage? What do we do with a story like this? Now, Rob this morning said, do we just put this story in the too hard basket, of which that basket's pretty full? Well, I thought of another option. Maybe you just put it in the quirky story basket of the Bible. There's lots of quirky stories in the Bible. But then again, that basket's pretty full too. So what do you do with this story? Do you just say, look, don't make an oath? That's the whole meaning. That's the whole point of the story. Don't make any oaths. Well, there is an element of being careful about agreements and oaths and things that we bind ourselves to. That we saw that in the second reading also, didn't we? That was from the Gospel of Matthew, when Jesus says, don't swear by heaven or by earth, which is God's footstool. Yeah, and what Jesus is saying is, he's not saying don't make agreements, but don't put God as guarantor. Don't use God as some sort of magic formula, like on my mother's grave, I'll really do it type sort of thing. No, just let your yes be yes, your no be no. If you said you'll do it, do it. If you said you won't do it, don't do it. Simple. And in some ways, that's also the story of Joshua. There is an element of be very careful what you agree to. I go to a lot of weddings, joyous occasions. And there's a point in the wedding service when I get to read, Marriage is something that's not to be entered into lightly or carelessly, but with serious and reverent respect for which it was instituted by God. You can see I've said those words a few times, can't you? It is not something to be entered into lightly or carelessly, but with serious and reverent respect for which it was instituted by God. The greater the consequences, the less lightly we should enter into agreements. We should be careful. And our yes should be yes, and our no should be no. But this story is not just about oaths, is it? Now, in this story, in Joshua, and in fact in every story in Joshua, in fact in every element of the scriptures, we need to be asking ourselves as we read each of these stories, here's a good way of thinking. Who is God? What does this passage tell me about God? And what does this passage tell me about what God is doing? They're good questions to ask in any passage of the Bible. Who is God? What is God like? What is he doing? What does he require of me? And what you see in here is that God actually doesn't play a very big role in the story, does he? He doesn't get asked. But Joshua does. And I actually wonder, in this story, when you see the second half of the story, if Joshua is starting to come of age. You know at the start of the book of Joshua? What does God have to say to Joshua? Be strong and courageous. And just so he gets it, he says, and be strong and courageous. And just in case he missed it the first two times, be strong and very courageous. He's actually having to build Joshua up. In fact, he has to build Joshua up and recommission him again. He has to continue to encourage Joshua to lead the people. And I actually think Joshua starts to come of age. Because when you look at the end of this story, Joshua finds himself in a difficult situation where he has to make a decision. The Gibeonites say to him, do what you think is right and fair. Have a look at verse 25. We are now in your hands, they said. Do to us whatever seems good and right to you, Joshua. And I actually think what you see in Joshua as he makes these decisions is you see God in the decisions and the actions of Joshua, and the attitudes and what is important to God starting to be reflected in what Joshua does. Let me explain what I mean by that. The first thing, we see God through Joshua, because Joshua welcomes the Gibeonites to begin with. Here's this delegation. They turn up. Yeah, I know they've got old clothes and they've got old sandals. I know. It's a trick. I've read the story too. But he welcomes them. He gives them an opportunity to say their piece, as it were. God is a welcoming God, isn't he? And you know what? I know that there are people who come sometimes and they don't have their story straight with God. They still come to him. I've met people who have come to church even because they've said, they've prayed one of those prayers. God, if you get me out of this situation, I'll go to church. Do you know what? I can work with that. That's a good place to start. I'll work with that. They haven't got their story straight yet. They're like the Gibeonites. They're coming for all the wrong reasons. But God can work with that too, and He welcomes them into the situation. You and I know that. We know people in our workplaces, in our school places, in our university, in our homes, our street, wherever it is, that haven't got their story straight with God. And maybe they're going for all the wrong reasons, but you know, God can work with that, and He welcomes that. They come. And we need to be people who do that, like Joshua. Welcome them in. But what you also see is you see God through the actions and the decisions of Joshua, because you see in Joshua faithfulness to His word. He is faithful to His word. What did we read in verse 19? The leaders answered, "We have given them our oath by the Lord, the God of Israel, and we cannot touch them now." And Joshua sticks by that. He sticks by his oath. Yes, I know that this decision was made under false pretenses. And I reckon they've got a pretty good cause for saying this is null and void. But they stick by their oath they made before the Lord. We are people also to be, like God, people of our word. Our yes be yes, our no be no. That there's an old way of saying it. My word is my bond. Remember that? My word is my bond. If I say it, I'll do it. If I said I won't do it, I won't do it. My word is my bond. And God is a God whose word is His bond. He's a faithful God, isn't He? He's a God who says, yes, I will save you. Yes, I can forgive you, and I have forgiven you. God is faithful when? Even when we're faithless. All through Joshua, all through the Bible, God is faithful. And we see that in Joshua, who is faithful. And also in Joshua, we see what God is like, because in Joshua we see mercy. You see mercy. I actually think Joshua was given a blank check. Aren't they dangerous words for Gibeonites to say? We are in your hands. Do to us what you think is right and fair. Is that not a blank check? I think it is. What does Joshua do? He shows mercy. Yes, they trade their lives for servitude, but the Gibeonites are spared in much the same way that a woman, just a couple of stories ago, was also spared. Remember Rahab? Very similar, isn't it? God is a God of mercy. He shows mercy to Rahab. He shows mercy to the Gibeonites. He shows mercy to Israel. He shows mercy to you and to me. In Joshua, in God, we see welcome, we see faithfulness, we see mercy. Do you know what? I actually reckon all around us are modern day Gibeonites. In fact, you might be a modern-day Gibeonite. You've come to God maybe with not having your story straight, and maybe even for all the wrong reasons. Maybe you're a bit like me. You know, when I first came to God, I just came because I didn't want to go to hell. That was a fairly good reason, actually. There are modern-day Gibeonites all around us. Maybe you're one. Maybe you know one. Maybe you were one. Modern day Gibeonites everywhere. And do you know what they need? They come to God on their terms, even if their terms are all screwed up. But they need to find welcome. And they need to find faithfulness. And they need to find what? Mercy. And they find it in God. They find welcome. Come to me, all who labor and are heavy laden, Jesus said. They find faithfulness. God is faithful even when we are faithless. and they find mercy. Father, forgive them, for they know not what they are doing. They find it in God. Will they find it? Will they find it in God's people? Us.